Tim, we'll start off with you. Once again, the issue of a new elementary school is coming up before voters. Can you just remind them what they will actually be voting on April 3rd?
They'll be voting on a $30 million school bond that will allow us to build a new elementary school and relocate the baseball and softball fields.
I'm going to ask both of you this question. What do you see as the biggest need or the biggest reason for this? And Jillian, we'll start with you. What is the biggest need for this new school?
It's hard to narrow down really to just one, but ultimately we're talking about our youngest learners, and they are currently trying to learn 21st century skills in buildings that are older than most of their great-grandparents. The school district over the years has done an admirable job of trying to keep the buildings as functional as possible, but not only are we outgrowing those buildings in terms of technology needs, but we're outgrowing them in terms of space. Currently in one of our elementary schools, we have a first grade section that has split the library into four sections for their classrooms. Neither of the buildings are accessible to all of our special needs students. Obviously, codes in 1917 are not what codes are today. And there have been some tricky situations to be able to get students where they need to be in our buildings for optimal learning.
And Tim, same question. What stands out for you when it comes to the need for a new building here in Fort Madison?
I think for me, safety. Safety is a big one. You know, both elementary school buildings right now, you do have to buzz to get in, but then to get to the office, you have to go at Lincoln. You go down a long hall before you get to that. And right to your left, as soon as you walk in the door, is stairs to go up to multiple floors. So if you wanted to do harm, it would still be easy to do. Richardson, you buzz in, and then you have to find your way to the office, which is down a hallway, up a flight of stairs to your left. If you don't know where you're going, if I'm just a grandparent dropping something off for a grandchild, it's very difficult to even find the office, let alone if you're wishing to do harm, you know, you can get in and do stuff. And then also pick up and drop off. I know people are still complaining about the new middle school being congested, picking up and dropping off. What people fail to realize, that's 700 students. And if you go out there 10 minutes after that bell has gone off, there's hardly a kid around there. It is very efficient pickoff. If everybody follows the traffic signs around there and drops off like they're supposed to in the circle drive and doesn't just fly around, it is very safe and it works very well. But a lot of that falls back on parents having to follow traffic laws too. But for me, I think safety is the biggest one for the elementary schools.
I would add to that, the cost of the bond referendum that we're proposing includes changes to the infrastructure, roadways, to make that easier, both at the middle school and at the proposed elementary school. That's included in that price tag. It's a turnkey project, so it includes fixtures. It includes supplies for the kids. We're not going to have a separate conversation or raise separate funding for what goes in the building. It's not just the structure itself. It's everything that goes inside.
At this point here, when it comes to the new school, how far has the design come? I mean, is it we have this thing all drawn out, we know exactly what's going where, or is it more of a rough scope of it at this point?
We have two-dimensional renderings of what a proposed building would look like. The goals of the plans are to have collaborative learning spaces for all grades. There is space built in right now for there to be an outdoor piece of learning also. So you'll see in the plans there are various cubes with small outdoor spaces in between so science classes can take their kids outside. The plans also include playground equipment for the elementary buildings, but also for the lower middle school level kids at the middle school. It includes playground equipment for them as well. In the community, I've heard a number of parents and, quite frankly, kids in the fourth and fifth grade levels that have indicated that recess has been really difficult as a transition to the middle school because there isn't any playground equipment for them. This bond would cover that. It would give them more options to be able to burn some of that energy so they can concentrate more in the classroom.
And Tim, I'd assume that accessibility and security are two things that would also be highly addressed with this new building.
Definitely. Kind of like the model with the new middle school now. I mean, you have to come in, you immediately have to buzz into the office, and then you're into the office before you can go anywhere else in that building. It would be a similar design like that. You'd have to come through the office first before you get into the building at all. That would be a much safer way to do it. Same thing with the drop-off and pick-up. You know, you have having the all the busing. You know, we build this elementary school. It'll make our busing much more efficient, and we'll be able to bus all K through 8 kids that want to get bused. So that'll make it a lot easier. And then the parent drop-off will be a much safer, simpler way to come in, drop off, and leave. So that'll be a much better issue.
When it comes to just the overall project here, I mean, this is obviously the third attempt to get the bond passed. It's gradually gotten more support, but it needs that 60%. The two of you are on the board, but you're also in the community. What are some of the reasons that you hear for why people are voting no, or maybe why they aren't even turning out to vote?
One of the big ones that I keep hearing pop up is, well, why do you need the ball fields on it? I think we need a new school, but we don't need the ball fields. And they're like, well, you got the new fields right across the street there. Why don't you just use the Baxter Complex? A couple reasons. One, Baxter Complex was not built for high school softball and baseball. The baseball fields are not big enough for a high school regulation baseball field. And for softball, they're too small or too big. Those fields were designed for adult softball league and then youth 14 and under softball and baseball and programs there. You know, the other thing is at the high school, the baseball field now, we got a manhole cover in center field. You know, if you look at the outfield fence, it's not a uniform fence. There's a lot of issues. If it rains, it becomes a muddy mess up there for 3 or 4 days, which causes scheduling problems. The girls' dugout almost fell in last year. So there are a lot of issues up at those fields that need to be taken care of too. If we ever wanted to add on or do anything at the high school is landlocked. So first thing we have to do is locate those fields somewhere else before we could do anything at the high school, any kind of improvements at the high school in the future.
Is it just the convenience of if there's already going to be work going on, we might as well do it at the same time? Is that part of the factoring in of that as well?
Big part of that. I mean, you've got all the heavy equipment doing there. They're already moving all the dirt work. You know, they're going to have to, I'm assuming, build a big level out the pad there again. It's so much easier for them to just, okay, while they're there, do the baseball and softball fields. And that cuts down the cost quite a bit. If they have to come back in 5 years and try to do that again, that greatly increases that cost because then all the equipment you're going to have to bring back in there, you're going to have to remove all the dirt again. So, yeah, it's much easier when you're doing it all to do it at once.
Julian, has there been anything that has really stood out that you've heard when it comes to people voting no on this or just skipping the polls at all?
One thing that I've heard that we haven't brought up in our conversation yet is the climate control piece of the buildings. A common thread that I have heard from the community as well, I didn't have air conditioning when I went to school. Why do these kids need it? And I've been there. My middle school was not air conditioned, and my middle school had 4 floors. And I remember having classes in the afternoon at the end of the school year or the beginning of the school year when it was hot and not remembering a thing that was going on in the building that day because it was so hot. I would venture to say that at this point, the technology that is running through those buildings right now generates heat. And the heat that's generated from all of those pieces of technology is generating a hotter building than what it was 20 years ago, what it was 50 years ago, certainly. And we're talking about buildings that are 100 years old. So I think that the temperature piece with these kids isn't something that we can overlook. That environment in there is very hot at the beginning of the school year in August and at the end of the school year in May or early June. I have a kindergartner over at Lincoln right now, and those first couple days of school, I would ask her, honey, how was school? And she would say how excited she was to be there, but then say, oh, Mom, it was so hot in there towards the end of the day. And, you know, your heart breaks a little bit because, you know, as a mom, you want your kids to be learning in an optimal environment. And I think we as the voter have the power to do that for our youngest learners.
The other thing you'll hear a lot of times, people will say, well, again, when I was in high school, we didn't have air conditioning. Also, air conditioning wasn't as prevalent then. Right now, the kids were waking up in a home that's climate controlled. You get in a car, it's air conditioned to go to school. Now you sit in a hot school all day long, and then you leave and you're back into your air conditioned house or, you know, car back to go home, and then you're air conditioning all day. So the kids are, their bodies are not used to that anymore. You know, 50 years ago, yes, you woke up and it was hot. Your house not have been air conditioned. You were outside or in the classroom, it wasn't air conditioned. You got home, it was not air conditioned, or you'd be outside all the time. So you were more used to that. Today, society, we're not that way anymore. We have the technology to be air conditioned, so we are. And so that's a big factor too, is the kids, their bodies just aren't used to that and adapting to it as well either.
What has been the school board's approach? There's obviously that it's that balancing act. There's a kids committee, and that's the committee that's been kind of leading the effort to promote this project. How has the school board been involved in this project that throughout the promotion of it or the information around it? What's been the school board's role?
Well, the school board's role, first of all, is to provide facts, to do the background, to find out what the cost of building the school would be, what the cost of renovating old schools would have been. You know, when you lay those out side by side and not only renovating but adding on to the other schools, it's quite a bit more expensive than it is to build the new school. So you're like, okay, which is the more fiscally responsible way to do this? And then if you do little fixes here and there on the other schools, at what point does it reach the point of, okay, you're just throwing good money after bad? You know, you have to be efficient with taxpayers' money. I know people don't think we are, but we are actually trying to be very efficient with their money. And that's why the new schools work much better that way.
And looking at that, what was the estimate? I mean, a ballpark figure of about what it was going to be if you were going to try to retrofit these older buildings to the modern standards here. Did you have a number on that?
When we first started, you adjust it for the 4% every year. Now it would be up to about $40 million at least. And then anytime you start doing a renovation project, when you open the walls up, you never exactly know what you find. We've been told the asbestos has been taken out of those buildings, but you start opening up walls, you might find more asbestos. At Lincoln, if we were to expand there or add on, you'd have to add on a gym or a cafeteria area to the south of that. That's where that old high school or old building used to be at. We've been told by several people that that was never filled in correctly, and we've had sinkholes that kind of go along with that. So you start digging in that ground there, you're going to have to fix whatever wasn't filled in correctly the first time before you put any kind of a foundation there. That adds greatly to the cost. Then if you were to remodel, you've got to get, okay, so all the kids would have to leave that building for a couple years before you could come back and use that building. So say if we remodeled Lincoln first, well, then what would you do with all the other kids? So you have to buy modular units to put at Richardson. Well, you can't just throw those up. You've got to pour the correct foundation for those. You got to run electrical to it. You got to run plumbing. So that's all more extra costs. Plus buying the mobile units. That's, you know, 10 to 12 mobile units for classrooms. That's not very cost effective. So you start adding those costs to it. And the $40 million was just for renovating. It did include those extra costs there. So you're getting up $45 million at least.
Has the cost of the project changed just because of a couple of years older and a couple of the expenses have gone? Jillian, has there been a change in the overall cost, and how has that been addressed?
Tim, feel free to correct me if I'm misstating here, but I believe compared to the last time the bond referendum went to vote, the cost increase has been about 4%. And there are a number of factors that have gone into that. Inflation is one, just things are more expensive now than they were a year ago. We've also had a number of natural disasters since then in our country, whether it be hurricanes, massive flooding, fires out west. Those things will affect the cost of construction materials. There's, I'm sure, a shortage of a number of those things nationwide when you think about the scope of some of the remodels and new construction that needs to be done nationwide as a result of those things. And naturally, the trickle-down effect is that the cost for planned things like this goes up.
When we very, very first started with this, $27 million was where we started at. We started planning in the summer. That bond went to vote in December. Mm-hmm. That went down. So then you add 4% to that point, but we didn't. The first two other votes there, the price had went up each time, but we still, like, okay, we can kind of reconfigure it because we didn't want to confuse the voters by saying, okay, this time it's $28.75 million, it's $29 million. We tried to reconfigure what we were going to do and scale back. Okay, we know we can kind of change some things, eliminate some spaces here or there to try to get that back down to $27 million, even though we know the cost had gone up. Now it's kind of reached the point this third time, okay, it's been several years, that 27 has now gotten up to $30 million. It's like, okay, we got to ask for a new number instead of coming back for 27 again.
When you're dealing with a $30 million project, one of the first things people will think about is the tax impact. How is this going to affect a property owner? Tim, what's an example of what a property owner could see if this is approved, what they would see over the years here?
Okay, so on your average home in Fort Madison, which we've been told is a $75,000 home through the assessor's office, $2.98 a month. So basically, that's your, not even a cup of Starbucks coffee is your increase in price.
One of the issues I know at one point, and maybe it's been resolved since then, was transportation. That seemed to be a big question and on a lot of people's mind. Jillian, how is transportation, if it has changed to where instead of these two schools, there would be one central school, how would transportation be addressed? What was the issue that was being questioned, and how has the board looked to address that?
Being able to have both an elementary school and a middle school in one location could improve the efficiency of our busing significantly. I know statewide with consolidation of a number of districts, I don't think we're at the top of the list anymore in terms of square miles that are by our bus routes in a given day, but we are near the top in terms of area covered by our buses. And I know one area where the community feels like a need is not being met transportation-wise is with our youngest students having to walk to school if they live a certain distance away. And one of the perks of this bond is that the option would be there for any student, K-8, who wants to be able to ride the bus to school. Parents would not have to worry about them walking to school. That option would be available because of the improved efficiency compared to our current system.
So would it be the case where, is that a board? I believe that to be a board commitment that people will be able to use the bus. It's not the state says if you're within this close, you have to walk. But this is something that the board has wanted to put out there.
Definitely. How it works right now, let's say if you go to Victor Field to pick up a group of kids, that bus will go to Richardson, drop some kids off, pick some kids up. Then it goes to the middle school, drops some kids off, picks some up. Then it loops back around back to Lincoln, drops some, picks some off. Then it goes back to Victory Field again, kind of a little loop like that. At any point in time, that bus is not completely packed. But you have to allow space for coming on, getting off, and who might be riding. If we have that new elementary school built out there, that bus, same bus, will go to Victory Field, pick up a full load of kids, drop them off, middle school and elementary school. It'll circle back around, go back to Victory Field again, pick up another load of kids, go back. So that one bus is able to make two loops, and at the same time before it made one big loop. So it'll be a lot more efficient on how it operates and runs. You know, that will help tremendously. Now, kids will still have to walk, say, if you live two blocks from like Victory Field. You'll still have to walk to Victory Field. We won't be going door to door to pick up. Mm-hmm. But a central location like that, you might walk a couple blocks to do, but it'll still make it a lot better and a lot easier for the parents to get out. And that'll also help with traffic congestion and that kind of stuff too, because, you know, we would prefer to bus more of the kids that we can.
You two are both in the community. There have been changes throughout the process. At first, it was more like some social media and then more in person. I mean, is just the information getting out there from the kids' committee being here and the two of you seeing it in town, are you seeing a change from maybe the first time to this time? Are you noticing that difference in how the message is getting out there?
The social media campaign has really done a good job of communicating to the general public, not only with facts, but I think some really good myth busters too. I think that we are very fortunate in our community to have news outlets that are willing to cover it and be able to use the print form to our community members that don't follow social media or don't subscribe to social media. But I think as board members and as kids committee representatives, one of our responsibilities is as elected officials is to help inform the community about what's going on in the boardroom. That's why we're transparent with our meetings. They're published online. Our minutes are published prior to meetings. We encourage the public to attend. We want to be as transparent as possible with what this can do for our community.
And that actually prompted a question. Have there been other myths or other, I mean, calling it a myth is an interesting, have there been anything we haven't touched on that people may have the idea of that either the board or the district or just the kids committee have been trying to address? Have there been anything that we haven't touched on during this interview that has really been something that's been out there?
One myth is that the site at the middle school, it's sliding downhill or it's built in a swamp. The middle school site and the proposed elementary school are, and the fields would be above the 500-year floodplain, which is kind of the gold standard. Mm-hmm. You know, the middle school hasn't fallen in a big hole. It's not going anywhere. I'd actually be more worried if we expanded it south of Lincoln about something falling through there in that unstable area there. But that's why I'd say I'd encourage everybody to go to Facebook, like the Fort Madison Kids Committee Facebook page. They do a great job of, you know, if they hear something out there, a myth or an incomplete or an untrue fact or that people are trying to say, they are doing a great job of addressing those, trying to be very open with everything and trying to get the correct information out there.
What would be that 30-second pitch from each one of you as to why you would want to see this approved?
For our kids. I mean, putting the kids first for their future, for their safety. You know, trying to give them all the skills we can to give them the best start in life that we can. I mean, that's what our ultimate goal is, to get the kids the best possible start. So when they walk out of our graduation, you know, as a senior through high school, we have given them the best possible start we can in their life to be successful citizens wherever they go and whatever future they choose to do. But we want to get them a great foundation to start with here.
I would encourage the community to think about this not just as an investment in our youngest learners, but an investment in our community. We are trying to prepare our learners for what life is like after graduation. And in a lot of cases, that means adults coming back to our area and contributing to society. And this school can significantly help with providing that foundational environment to bring back adults that are involved in our community, are invested in our community, and raise families in our community. I did not grow up in Lee County. I didn't grow up in Fort Madison. My husband and I are quote-unquote transplants to this area. And speaking from that role, if we have businesses that are trying to recruit new people to Southeast Iowa, one of the first things they look at is schools. And we take pride in our schools and what's going on inside of our schools. And a new building will allow us to take pride in what's going on in our buildings and outside our buildings and give us that showpiece to help recruit new families to our area.
We touched on kind of the traffic patterns at what would be the new elementary school. Is there an issue at this point that the board is seeing with the two existing elementary schools?
Right now, our two elementary schools are on each what I would call the two busiest roads in Fort Madison. Richardson is on Business 61. It's four lanes. There is a traffic light. There is a person at that corner to help kids cross that highway, but it's very busy, especially when school starts and when school gets out. Lincoln is on Avenue E, which also is very busy, and there's not any sort of circle drive or any sort of cohesive drop-off point. And the staff have done a great job of evaluating that this year and making some changes to make a pseudo drop-off and pickup zone where cars aren't supposed to park. But that's always a worry for us as a board, is the safety issues at our two current buildings in terms of traffic flow.
There's one other question I had, too, that came up as we were talking about this. If this were to pass, has the board decided what would happen with those two buildings? Has there been any talk of that at this point?
We've had a couple different entities approach us about uses for those buildings. Obviously, the district does not – we don't want to own a lot of properties. So we would be definitely in favor of dispersing of those properties to other individuals. And we've had a couple different groups approach us about using them. I can't say at this time who they were, but yes, we've actually thought about that and are looking forward to that.